Cohen, Your Honor, if I could reduce the reserve to 3 minutes.
Sure.
Thank you.
Can we reduce a reserve to three? Sure. Yeah, we just have one door open. They're still going. What? You must have done something to make all those people get up and leave like that.
I was hoping for an audience. But I had that happen at the Wisconsin Supreme Court, too.
You stood up.
It's all full. I get up and they leave.
Doors opened. And people fled. All right, we're going to go on to 11-3233, Estate of Jesse Miller versus Tobias. Yeah.
Good morning, Your Honors and Counsel. Thank you. Qualified immunity. Immunity from litigation as well as from liability has the same two-part test as its legal inquiry, no matter when it's raised in the litigation, whether it's on dismissal, judgment on the pleadings, summary judgment, trial, whenever it is raised, the same two-part test applies and plaintiff must prove each part. The factual inquiry changes. If it's on dismissal, we look at the complaint and its attachments. If it's on summary judgment, we look at affidavits. If it's at trial, we look at trial evidence. So the factual inquiry changes. The district court here, because of that changing factual inquiry, seemed to be go the wrong way on the legal inquiry.
Well, isn't the real issue here whether the complaint adequately alleges the defendants knew of yet disregarded Mr. Miller's mental illness and his potential to attempt to kill himself?
That is correct. That's the substantive inquiry, ultimately. What I was talking about first was the structure for looking at qualified immunity. When we get to the substance, that is the issue, and it's whether or not there was a known, an actually known risk. We look at each defendant, did that defendant have actual knowledge of that risk, and then did they deliberately disregard that risk?
Well, actually, consciously. I mean, yes. And wasn't it well established by the time Mr. Miller committed suicide in 2008, the prison staff cannot consciously disregard an inmate's known serious medical needs, nor his known proclivity to commit suicide or to attempt to commit suicide?
Yes, if you had a doctor that knew, that had read that, let's say Dr. Tobias had read through that entire file, that medical file that he did not have because it was found later in the HSU. After an extensive search, he did not have that file. But let's say he did have that file and he had read through that whole file. Well, then the analysis would be, did that file and that review of that file tell Dr. Tobias, with that knowledge, that there was an imminent risk of suicide?
Well, here, you just said something. Dr. Tobias knew from the interview with Mr. Miller that Mr. Miller was on a lot of medication, had a history of cutting himself, although it's true that he denied knowing, he denied having any recent thoughts about suicide. But given what Dr. Tobias knew, couldn't one infer that somehow she should have either located the file or called the Wisconsin Resource Center, for example?
Dr. Tobias knew that just from his interview, that's all he had, he didn't have paper, but just from his interview, he knew from Miller that he was taking lots of meds. He didn't know what they were for. And in fact, some of them were completely unrelated to psychiatric conditions. And so he knew there were lots of meds from Miller. Well, that doesn't tell us a lot. He knew from looking at his arms that there were prior old scars. He knew there was self-harm in the past. He didn't know about suicidal ideation or that there was any suicidal incident in the past. And in a prison, self-harm, unfortunately, happens quite a bit.
How is it that the nurse previously, she seemed to have much more information?
Yes.
Why was that not? I'm trying to figure out how that was not. You said Dr. Tobias didn't have, but the right. nurse had it all?
We don't know. And here's what happened. The nurse was doing a screening transfer. She got
Nickel?
The file.
Nickel.
Janelle Nickel, who is Jane Doe, John Doe in the pleadings. But Janelle Nickel, she had the file. At least the chart, and we assume it's the whole file. She looked through it and did her screening, said, this person goes to psychiatric services unit, on psychiatric medication, circles that, and moves the file and those things on.
So are you?
We don't know why. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Are you saying that Dr. Tobias didn't say to Nurse Nickel, do you have a file here?
We have no idea whether there was any communication in this large institution between Dr. Tobias and Janelle Nickel. Janelle Nickel is over here doing screening. She moves it on to the health services unit, the psychological services unit, and then we have allegations.
What she moved on was a file that had suicidal risk all over it, basically.
Right.
I mean, he hadn't seen a facility where he hadn't attempted suicide.
This gentleman is very tragic. He was constantly trying to commit suicide. But the question, when we move from Janelle Nickel and we focus on Dr. Tobias, qualified immunity, we have to look individually. We can't look institutionally. And when we look individually, Dr. Tobias, as his report states, did not have that file. That's corroborated by the fact after the suicide, it took an extensive search to find it. Detective Garrigan didn't get that file, which he wanted, after the suicide until the next morning.
Forgive me, but I'm having such a hard time understanding this. That Nurse Nickel has the file, and yet Dr. Tobias is searching, you know, for days and days after the suicide for this file.
We don't know that Dr. Tobias was involved in that search at all. The only involvement we have...
Should he not have been?
We don't... there is no obligation. This goes to one of the points that is raised by counsel. Okay, let's look first at what Dr. Tobias did in fact know. He knew, just from his interview, we have old self-harm. We know that Miller was informing him. And that's in the past. I'm not thinking those ways right now. Mr. Miller, would you like to be participating in some programs? We have some things coming up. Yes, I would. That'd be great. I'd like to do that. Those are the kind of things that Dr. Tobias is getting.
The time frame down a little bit between between the nurse and the doctor. It's not very long.
Not very long at all. We have in the morning Mr. Miller appearing at CCI, Janelle Nickel doing her screening. In the morning, Dr. Tobias doing his interview. We don't have the times, exact times that those two things occurred, but they were both in the morning on the 19th. So it's not unusual that you would not have the file picked up necessarily, but that's the only involvement we have by Dr. Tobias in this case.
Now, Dr. Tobias, did he make the decision whether it went to what he called disciplinary segregation 1 or the special management unit?
He made that choice.
And I think the DS-1
right.
was the more scrutinizing location.
Right. The HSU is the special management unit. That's where he ended up being assigned. One reason for that was that Dr. Tobias observed Mr. Miller and said, he's somewhat small. He wouldn't be a good idea to have in a general population. I'm going to put him in the SMU for his own protection. That's in his notes.
I get these initials mixed up, but mm-hmm. what is the most protective place, I understand, is the DS-1, isn't it?
No, the
I'm talking about the more frequent
HS-7? is the same as the SMU. Unfortunately, we have these acronyms. Right. The disciplinary segregation is more the general population.
Okay, so that, that's what I'm wondering.
And what he
so
ended up doing...
Is the SMU the most comprehensive observation?
Yes. Okay. Yes, that he assigned Mr. Miller to the place where he would be observed far more than in the general population and also be more protected.
Is that the same place he would have been assigned if he had known about his suicidal ideation?
It is the same place he would have been assigned.
There
were only two choices there.
And what else would have been done, though?
Had he known of an imminent risk of suicide, then other steps would likely have been taken. We don't know exactly what those would have been.
Well, you said, Counsel, he observed his size, that he was slight, and said, you know, I'm going to put him there for his own safety. But you also said he observed the markings and the slashings.
He also observed
old scars.
He
knew he was on medication. So wouldn't that have been just from his own observation and medication, the fact that the nurse sent him to him, another thing to go into and find out where's a record that tells me whether this guy does have suicidal ideation?
Under the law before Farmer v. Brennan, there might have been an obligation to go and search out the file. Farmer v. Brennan made it very clear, we have to deal with actual knowledge. What was the actual knowledge Dr. Tobias had? And all of the actual knowledge he had said, well, this is an inmate who has had prior self-harm. We don't know hint of suicidal ideation, anything. And we have, you know, somebody who's saying that he's ready to go into programs. Are you interested in these programs? Yes, I am. He's forward-looking. And that's what Dr. Tobias was dealing with. And we have to look at him as an individual. My time is up.
Well, if he had anything like we have in this appendix, if that's the file, you said, what would you first... My first impression was, how is this guy still alive at this point?
This is...
16 years old, jumping off of a three-story building, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
One time after this guy was determined to kill himself.
I'm afraid that ultimately he would have committed suicide at some point, and he did. But we look at the individual liability of each of these persons, and we just don't see anything near deliberate indifference. We're looking at negligence at most. Thank you.
Mr. Barnes, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, and I represent the estate of Jesse Miller. 3 years ago to this day, State Court Circuit Court Judge Schmidt ordered and found Mr. Miller incompetent and ordered that he have forcible medication for his psychotropic medications for his psychological needs. He did so at the request of the state. That court order was in force at the time in which he committed suicide. The reality in this case is that a file was given, and here the Chief Judge Conley dismissed a lot of different defendants in this case. He only left in the defendants who were responsible for the immediate care and custody of Mr. Miller, who had knowledge through the file, and he found that he could infer they had such knowledge under the circumstances here.
How did the guards have that knowledge?
Yes, Your Honor. The district court found and imputed and inferred that at this preliminary stage, because we're only at the pleading stage, that because of the medical unit they were in, that they were in the unit responsible for taking care of suicidal inmates along with other kinds of inmates that could either have threats from them externally or to themselves by themselves, that they would have notice and knowledge of the contents of the file because that is something that they would normally and customarily do. It is important, and one area where I disagree with a counsel is it's not a matter of the factual inquiry being different at the various stages of the litigation. It's what facts are assumed to be true at this stage of the litigation.
But if you have the Dr. Tobias saying, I didn't have that information with me, how is it that you believe that he passed that on to the guards who are in the unit in which he put him in?
Two different reasons, Your Honor. First, I believe that pursuant to this court's decision in Sandville v. McCautry, which is cited at 266 F3rd 724, as this court noted on page 732, the question at this stage is whether there's any hypothetical set of facts that could be consistent with the complaint that could show actual knowledge. Here, we believe the state of facts are that any doctor at a facility receiving a patient with injuries on his arms, admitting a history of self-harm, with psychotropic medications diagnosed, would have in fact reviewed the file and would have immediately asked for that file. A file that was filled with all and every kind of warning imaginable, including an order from a state court to monitor this person and to forcibly medicate them. So we believe that on that basis alone, it can be inferred at this stage of the case that, in fact, the doctor had such knowledge and everyone in whose immediate care and custody he had such knowledge.
Why was Mr. Miller incarcerated? Was he a pretrial detainee?
Yes, Your Honor. To my knowledge, he was. At various junctures at this level, he could also have stayed incarcerated because of the court's order of incompetency that he be forcibly medicated and was presented these problems. So there is different bases by which they could have held him in custody. But it's my understanding at this stage he was held in custody pursuant to various criminal charges.
I thought he was convicted and had probation, but it was required 1 year in jail.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe he was both. There are different bases by which they could hold him.
That's why he was in there. I kept wondering, why is he in here in the first place? Yeah. And I dug something out of the middle of this huge index. The appendix that's why he had done something like a threatened something or other, and so he got a conviction but it was 1 year, 10 year probation and 1 year in jail, and it's while he's in jail where he's leaving for the doctor and doesn't come back and all that kind of stuff that he kept getting jerked around. But that's why he was there in the first place.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Do you know why he was transferred from the Wisconsin Resource Center to that Columbia Correctional Institute?
We don't know, Your Honor. The hope was that some discovery would unveil that, but the district court made the decision based on this court's precedent that the center fulfilled their obligation by giving the warning file to CCI and making sure that they had notice and knowledge of the information. And so
back to Nurse Nickel for a minute, because what I understand is that your theory is that when she reviewed his file, she now knows of his psychiatric history and his high risk for suicide, but she didn't appropriately warn other staff members or make the appropriate notes?
Yes, Your Honor. That she didn't take certain immediate actions to make sure that he was placed into the proper custodial facility without access to ligatures, that he be placed in a supervised and monitored cell, that he not have means of hanging ligatures, that he not be placed with the means to commit suicide and the incentive to commit suicide and the tools to commit suicide, which is, in fact, what took place in this case.
You may not know, but in the SMU, are there different levels? For instance, is there such a thing as a padded cell with a video monitor?
Your Honor, we don't know all of those facts as yet.
I mean, that seems like the only thing that would work for him.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, in the other facilities, if they had removed bed sheets and not had any means of ligatures and maintained, if they didn't have a padded cell, didn't have a supervised cell, I believe that they discovered.
He was swallowing razor blades and toilet paper.
He was, Your Honor. He was a great danger to himself. But the court's order and the state's duty and obligation was to take some steps to protect him from himself. Unfortunately, Your Honor, they didn't do any.
Your clients, I want to be clear who they are. Are they relatives?
Yes, Your Honor. The estate of Jesse Miller and the relatives, Your Honor. I don't know all of them.
Well, the reason I asked about relatives, because I read somewhere he was in 54 foster homes.
Yes, Your Honor. That is correct. That is correct.
And at 16, he jumps off a building. I'm just curious of where any family is.
Yes,
is there any? Are these people just happen to be relatives?
No, Your Honor. There is family involved. I'm handling this stage of the
case.
Right.
That's what I'm curious. I mean, there is real family. For some reason,
Your Honor,
this guy is on his own.
No, Your Honor. He's not Your Honor.
Nobody was looking after him when he went to these various places demanding certain things, in other words.
Honestly, Your Honor, he was in the care of the courts and in care of the state.
I know, but there's family that sometimes intervene and say,
yes,
hey.
Your Honor. And there could have been, that intervention could have taken place at some point.
Well, we can see it.
Just unfortunately, now it can't occur.
Yeah. The one other thing I have, as far as the guards, there's an 11 o'clock guard and an 11:58 guard. I'm going to put up a time frame.
Yes, Your Honor.
11 o'clock, somebody goes through and finds him lying on the floor, which apparently is not uncommon during the heat, with nothing in his neck. 11:58, someone comes, whoever it is, comes in, and that's when all hell breaks loose. I understand those were two different people.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and was there a shift change or something?
We don't know, Your Honor. All we know is that between 11 and 11:58, around 11:25 or 11:30, his neighboring inmate starts saying that I've heard noises next door.
That's what he says.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And I guess what your thinking is, okay, we're at this pleading stage, that these kinds of little facts are going to be found out only after there's more discovery.
That is exactly
which
correct.
Which may doom the case.
That's correct, Your Honor. It may support the case. It may hurt the case. We won't know until we get to that stage, Your Honor. But I think that's why this court, in the Sandville decision, made note, I believe on page 738, that the Eighth Amendment does not allow an officer to turn a blind eye, and the question of actual knowledge is one of fact for discovery in the jury, once any set of facts could support the claim of an Eighth Amendment violation. And such hypothetical set of facts clearly could support here, just based on what we know.
Well, the reason I explore that distinction is because it seems to me once he's found, okay, this guy is the only one on the floor or something, which is curious, and then he's running around trying to get where everybody gets back together, and they're all, there's a lot of Keystone Cop stuff here, but I don't, you know, that's kind of far-fetched for deliberate indifference. They're all hustling around trying to do something.
That may be the case, Your Honor. We don't know.
Well,
the reason,
that's all that's alleged.
The reasonable inference, Your Honor, that we've alleged is that here they have a warning file, which we believe they knew.
No, they don't have it, though.
We believe they do at this stage, Your Honor. But if they, the second component is that this court found in Hall v. Ryan, a 1992 decision, where it was actually a lesser set of facts. The file was a thinner file. The people involved were not medical care custodial people. It was police officers who were involved in the arrest of an individual. And there, this court found that the access to that file, arrest file, would have shown suicidal history.
How long was he in the SMU?
Your Honor, about 3 days.
Okay.
That was sufficient to find reckless indifference. And, in fact, the First Circuit, Fifth Circuit, Sixth Circuit, Eighth Circuit have all followed that exact same logic, that the first duty as a medical professional, the first duty is an on-guard duty in a particular part of a prison facility that takes care of mentally ill and mentally dangerous people, is to review the file. If there's any, the state court judge had to rely upon that. I mean, what judges take that decision very seriously when they have to order someone forcibly medicated against their will. For state court judges to find that order doesn't mean anything if somebody says they mislocated the file and it has no import, no impact, would be a shock to many people.
What would this whole group of guards that show up, or whatever they are, the medical, the nurse, I don't know who all showed up within a 5 or 6 minute time period before they would go in the cell and take off all the stuff, they may have already been dead. But the besides the guard who was on duty, who maybe should have known a lot of stuff, what is any of these other people supposed to have done with prior knowledge?
Your Honor, it's only the on-guard duty, the psychiatric nurse, the intake nurse, the psychiatric associate, and the doctor who the district court left in the case.
There's only four people left?
That is my understanding.
Okay, not others. Just, if it was just four people, the two guards and the two medical people.
I believe so, Your Honor, and any other on-guard duty at that time in that part of the facility. But, for example, he dismissed one of the people who reacted to the case, who reacted involved in removing the ligatures and bringing him out, dismissed him as one of the defendants that were dismissed.
There were six or eight people around by that time, weren't there?
That is correct, Your Honor, and the only ones that are left in are those that were on guard during that time period and who would have had responsibility for his custody and care, Your Honor.
And that's two?
To my knowledge, it's two, Your Honor. There was a guard who showed up who saw him there, and I believe that's the second guard. It's possible there's a third guard.
Yeah, that's what I mean. There's two different people.
That's correct,
Your Honor.
That's
the 1158 guard.
That's my understanding, Your Honor.
Right.
But we have a limited set of facts here, and that's the reason and necessity for discovery, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I know, but
just
please add.
It was third shift.
There, 2 minutes.
There were eight guards.
I'm going to add some time for you. I'm giving you a gift. Okay, you're giving a gift judge in the mouth. You're looking a gift judge in the mouth. Okay, 2 minutes.
Thank you. It was third shift that started at 11. There were eight guards left in the case. The two, Millard was the one that saw him at 11. He looked in. He saw Miller on the floor, not unusual in the hot season to be on the floor. Didn't seem anything wrong with Miller. He moved on and did the rest of his examination.
What's his
examination.
Name?
Millard. That's Millard.
Okay.
Then Severson. Then Millard leaves the unit. Severson is the only one in the unit, the only guard. He's in the bubble, the control bubble, which allows access to the when people need to get in. So he's in the control bubble.
And there's only one guard.
One guard.
How many units are there? How many prisoners is he looking over all this?
I don't have the exact figure. I would say it's likely in the 15 to 20 range. I'm not sure. But Severson, and it is late at night. Most people are sleeping, but he's the one guard in there. Severson leaves the control bubble, goes around to do his midnight rounds, and at 11:58, Solis tells him, "Hey, I heard Miller pounding about 10 minutes ago, or I heard pounding on the wall about 10 minutes ago."
The guy supposedly yelling for 25 minutes.
And then Solis later, this is Severson's view, that he said, "I heard 10 minutes ago." Solis tells Detective Garrigan the next morning, "I was knocking on the door, on my door for 25 minutes." That's alleged in the complaint that's in the... Severson's in the control bubble. There's no allegation that Severson heard this knocking. In any event, Severson then goes and looks in the cell, in Miller's cell, sees Miller on the floor with a sheet, with some blood coming out. He tries to yell at him, whatever. He's non-responsive. He rings the alarm, and then things start happening. All the rest of the guards, including Millard, come out from other parts of the institution. So that's how we get the eight guards.
That's how we get eight?
Eight guards. Well, we get Severson, Millard, and six other people.
Well, what about these six other people? Are they still...
They're still defendants.
He's telling there's only two. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah, there's eight guards total. There's the nurse, Nickel, Dr. Tobias, and eight guards. Yeah. The eight guards consist of Millard, Severson, and then six other people that come from outside and didn't have anything else to do.